The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show here on September 19th, 2015. My name is Chris Stein. I'm a certified financial planner and a finance instructor at Colorado State University, and I'm here doing a live recording. Is that what we call it now, Jim?
Live recorded radio, yes.
Yes. So just that seems odd, but that's our version.
Well,
of,
we are live and we are
recording. We are alive while recording.
And it's meant to imply there's no takes. We muff up, people hear it. Except for once. Do you ever hear about the one time Pete? Hi, Pete. Pete Scott.
I'm here. So yes. Jim Solnier's here.
Yes.
Certified financial planner.
And Pete Scott, state planning attorney extraordinaire.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But did he ever tell you about the time we recorded a show and he never had the microphone plugged in?
Only about five times.
You have heard that.
Yeah, but okay. Mostly from you, I might add.
He only has that one story.
That's the only thing I have to cling to, that he's not infallible.
It did record just using a less than optimal microphone configuration.
It sounded like we were in a bathroom.
I was going to go with it because we recorded it.
It's kind of like in high school when you'd go in the bathroom and sing, get the harmony.
Yeah,
and the echo,
I was just going to tell people we were on location.
In the bathroom of KFK.
Right, in the bathroom. So this is the Retirement and IRA Show. No calls today. Sorry if you were waiting to phone us live. That's not going to happen today.
Or you could call, just no one will answer.
Well, true.
Or email.
And no one will reply.
Yeah. Well, not for a while.
Yeah.
So we are recording this on September 15th. So if there's any sort of drastic events that happen between now and the 19th, we won't be talking about it on the radio.
No, we will not.
Because we can't see the future.
There was one time we did have to go live. Something happened. Remember that? We had recorded a show, and there was something too major for us to ignore. And we went live instead. And we made mention of it.
I don't know. It wasn't September 11th.
It wasn't September 11th. I think it may have been the Aurora shootings. Was it that?
That could be.
It
would have been odd for us not to mention it, I guess.
And that's when we decided to start saying live recorded.
Ah.
So people would really know that okay, these guys aren't here, even though they're here.
So today, and since we're not taking phone calls, we do... answer still a few questions because
we have some
in the queue
we
didn't get to last time. Last week we were live and answered quite a few questions and had a number of entrants into the pie drawing.
But last week was weird in the sense all the calls came in at the end. Well, we went the first three segments, didn't have any calls. We had plenty of emails because we got a lot of emails that week. But
I'm convinced that maybe it's because people really want to hear the show that's on after ours and they're just tuning
in.
Just tuning in a little early and picking up the end of our show.
Or I'll listen to sleep late.
Could be.
Or have to wake up.
Or realize that the first part of the show we talk like this and they don't really learn anything.
No, we jumped right to the emails last week. We didn't banter much.
Yeah, so they missed out. We do have some more email questions to get to.
We do.
Including a, I believe, some sort of marriage proposal or something.
We'll get to that. It's not a marriage proposal.
Or similar. Although a relationship...
The way my dating luck is going, maybe I will
reach out
to Victoria.
Okay.
Who knows?
So, any updates on your cooktop, by the way? That's an interesting story.
The electrician's supposed to come tomorrow.
Oh, okay. So we'll find out.
He has confirmed.
Who?
The electrician.
Yeah.
That the stove was never wired. to the specs that I emailed him.
Oh, there you go.
So I'll just put that also in the list of things that the guy I hired to run my remodel never did right.
So you should apologize maybe to Whirlpool. Whirlpool?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, no, because they came out six times and never once thought to
check
test
that.
The voltage to make sure it was drawing enough power.
Yeah, that was silly of them.
Yes.
They wasted a lot of repair parts trying to fix a problem.
They replaced five parts, and on the sixth visit, just put a whole new stove in.
Mm-hmm.
So he's coming out tomorrow, which is Wednesday for us. By time this plays on Saturday, I have no idea how that went. But when I emailed him the specs, he was like, no way, Jim, not even close. I'm like, oh, okay.
So we could be live on Saturday if this goes very, very badly.
Perhaps. Okay, so, but that's where the cooktop stove is.
Okay. We'll give everyone an update once there's a final resolution.
I'm sure cooktop. My listeners are really dying to know about my cooktop and remodel from hell. But it's nice to know that...
Well, they've been following it for the past year plus.
Well, the
now.
New thing is the cracks in the bathroom, the kitchen ceiling.
Pardon?
Look wonderful. Oh, they just appeared this week. So now Highcraft, who did not do it, Highcraft is the real company I hired to fix the mess up of this other company.
They're going
to
fix it.
Well, they're going to come out on Thursday to see why exactly the kitchen ceiling is cracking. So this remodel has really turned into the remodel from you know where.
H-E double toothpick,
that's
right?
That's too bad.
Yes, yeah. And it's not funny. I'm trying to put September 8th was 1 year. Into my three-month remodel. And I told you I had to hire one of your cohorts to file lawsuits because, of course, the bathroom tile is already peeling up. And that was only late in November. But I couldn't use the bathroom until about 4 weeks ago anyways because the shower wasn't working. So they get the shower working, I start using the bathroom, and I notice the tiles start cracking. Well, he never connected them correctly to the ground, and they're just pulling off. I need to go on that reality A&E show so they'll come just remodel my house for free and then I can walk in looking all shocked like, oh,
is there
my
a
God.
Show? Is there a show where they just bulldoze it? And
start over?
Yeah, I think that's...
redneck remodel?
Or Mythbusters or something, or they blow things up.
Yeah, something.
It has not gone the way I wanted it to go.
It'll turn out nice, probably.
Oh, I'm sure. Just around the time I'm ready to sell it and relocate. Mm-hmm.
That's how it usually goes. People fix up their house just in time to sell it.
That's right.
Yeah, but see, I intend to keep the house for about a dozen years. I'm only 3 years into it.
Oh, you have plenty of time to finish this remodel then.
So, the remodel's not going well. Cracks in the ceiling or something new. Stove should hopefully be taken care of.
Mm-hmm. And you can boil simultaneously all the pasta dishes you want.
Use more than one of the heating elements of my five.
I've never seen anyone try to boil so many pots of water simultaneously.
I was doing that for illustrative purposes.
Oh, that's not a normal dinner preparation at your house? He literally had a huge stock pot in the middle.
That was my
boiling,
spaghetti pot.
And then he has another pot off to the side boiling something else. And then he put on a third pot of boiling water.
Exactly. But it was on a video to show what it was doing.
Any stovetop.
What do you want me to do, cook something
made,
for the video?
Made for humans probably can't handle that much boiling water.
Oh, please. You put a man on the moon, you can't boil three pots of water at once?
That just
apparently
seems
not.
Like,
apparently.
I don't know.
The thing is, for everybody, Chris and Justin in the office, both of you aren't even, to the best of my knowledge, Whirlpool repairmen, are you?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm not.
And the first thing they said when I explained it all to them was?
The wiring.
Yeah, the wiring.
Yeah.
Whirlpool never thought to check the, of course, I don't know because I'm totally clueless on this. They came the first time, they replaced this part. Then they came the second time, replaced another pot. Then the third time, they replaced the first pot again. And it's just, it was crazy. They even replaced the glass on top. They just replaced all these pots, and then they just threw up their hands and put a new one in. And it still did it. And that's when Chris said, I bet you it's the wiring.
And?
And it's the wiring.
So I contacted the electrician who originally did the house, and he emailed me back. He said... I don't want to say the guy, I should say the guy's name, but blank never gave me the specs. He says that stove is not wired to those specs.
Oh, the general contractor didn't
give
him the specs. The otherwise known as the idiot?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I see.
That's instead of George, we'll just refer to them.
So it was never wired to the specs of the stovetop. Okay, so let's jump into what we're going to talk about today. Of course, we're going to have the top three songs, 1935, 1975, and 1980, as we look back 80 years, 40 years, and 35 years in our countdown to what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. That's always a fun part of the show. We also are going to answer a few email questions. We have three this week. One we started last week and didn't have a chance to finish it. That's going to be the first one we're going to lead into. Pete, did you have anything specifics that you wanted to address this show? Or
not today so far. Today? Something may come to mind as we talk about this.
So then we're going to jump into Roth recharacterizations. Mm-hmm. Always a fine topic this time of year, mm-hmm. because any Roth that you converted, and we'll explain what all this means, any Roth that you converted in 2014, you have until October 15th of 2015 to undo. And we're just going to talk a little bit about what a conversion is, what a recharacterization is, how do you do it, and a few lesser known items regarding conversions and recharacterizations.
And probably why you might want to recharacterize at some point.
Correct, why you may want to do it, yes. Not everybody wants to do it or needs to do it, but sometimes it is a wise thing to do.
And if you want to, the deadline is approaching.
Quickly.
Yes.
Okay, so let's get to, and again, we're going to call this person George, although she did re-email me later on after the show with her name, but we're still going to call her George, as we always do.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
Yes, my favorite soundbite. She gave her real name so she could be entered into the pie drawing, she said.
Wise woman.
Wise woman. And she also indicated she will get the key lime pie from Fat Albert's.
Even in the fall.
Even in the fall.
Wow.
Yep.
She's kind of a renegade.
She is going out on a limb there. Mm-hmm. But if she wins, she will get the key lime pie for Fat Albert.
I like her approach to life, though. If you like your key lime, don't be
seasonal.
Don't be restricted by the season.
Okay.
I appreciate that.
Jim's not embracing
He's
this.
He's probably from out west. That's kind of the way we, out here we wear white pants after Labor Day.
And eat key lime pie.
And eat key lime pie.
You just don't care.
No.
Okay, but anyways, this George will get the key lime pie if she wins. So who is the keeper of the pie list? Because you will be giving away the pie.
True.
Do you have the keeper of the pie list from last week?
No.
Apparently not. He's stumbling.
Not with me now because it's not a live show, so I didn't bring it.
Oh, but you do have it.
Somewhere, yes. I believe I do.
If not, see Tina.
We have it.
Yes.
We have it, which I will bring to the next live show.
Make sure you get this person's name as well and put her down.
Okay, so
I'm not going to give it to you over the air. We just called her George. Oh, show it to you. That we can do. Right there.
Just spell it.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Yeah, don't say it. Just spell it.
See it right there at the bottom?
I see it.
See how she put her George in parentheses? Isn't that cute?
That is very cute. Okay. I have George added to the list.
Okay. All right. So she wrote originally, I have heard that a person born in 1947.
Oh, this question.
Yes. Receives less benefit from Social Security as compared to others. Mm-hmm. Any truth to this? And Chris, I will let you answer. What was
that's
that
our
for?
That's our truth sound. Because the only other sound I have is this, which means no.
You got more sounds than that.
Well, which of these do you think means yes? That or...
Here I come to save the day.
I don't think any of those really...
I know nothing. Nothing.
That's appropriate for our show.
Yeah. I just can't find anything
So clapping is yes. Nope, that's the thinking. We're not thinking. We know the answer to this. The answer is yes. Okay, why don't you explain to George why people born in 1947 are going to receive slightly less Social Security than anyone else?
It seems odd, right? Why are they picking on people from 1947, a fine year on the calendar?
Yes.
If I might say so. So here's the deal. Everyone remembers 2008.
Oh, boy.
Stocks went...
Yeah, a lot of weird things going on in 2008. Yes. So in 2008, in October of every year, the Social Security Administration does their calculation to look at what inflation has been over the prior year to set any cost of living adjustment that will be implemented in January. So they actually do the calculation in October. so that it will apply to the December payments, which are sent out in January. So your January check will see the cost of living adjustment when there is one. Well, in October of 2008, when they took a look at this, there was actually fairly significant inflation over the prior year that they saw, such that they decided to implement a 5.8% cost of living adjustment to Social Security, which would go into effect in January of 2009. Well, between October and December, prices plummeted along with the stock market during that time. That was the same time of the financial crisis, and that was the kind of the peak of all of the trauma that was going on in the markets, and prices declined, and that 5.8% cost of living adjustment or inflation they had seen essentially evaporated in those last couple of months of the year. Well, they'd already decided on the cost of living adjustment being 5.8% starting in 2009, so the effect of this is that in 2009, at the end, when they were setting the inflation adjustment for the next year, it was zero. If people remember back in 2010 and 2011, there was no cost of living adjustment to Social Security. And the reason is they had to wait until prices got back above that 2008 level that they'd already adjusted for. So essentially what happened, once they implemented the increase, they couldn't take it back, even though inflation had evaporated for that year. So they kind of prepaid people for inflation that really did occur in 2009 and 2010. Well, this is where the window of bad luck comes in. For people born in 1947, they turned 62 in when, Jim?
2008?
62? It's 2009.
That's what I said, 2009.
Right. So
don't give me a math problem when I don't have a calculator in front of me.
So the ramifications of this is they just barely missed the cost of living adjustment.
Missed it? By, we have that soundbite.
Oh.
You missed it?
Missed it by that much.
There we go. Perfect. See, you knew we could use that one.
Yeah. It's not as effective when you announce it before I play it, but I get what you're going for there. So they missed that because they weren't receiving benefits yet at that time, but they then got the penalty, essentially, of zero cost of living adjustments in 2010 and 2011 because prices hadn't gone back up above 2008 levels. So people who are already claiming, so people younger than that, got the benefit of it. People that came later, because of the way they do the calculation for your benefits, aren't as affected or affected at all by this. It really focused in on those people that happened to have the bad luck of turning 62 in the year 2009.
And what's the significance of turning 62 in 2009?
It's when you turn, what a lot of people don't realize, is when you turn 62, that is the year that they determine your primary insurance amount. That is actually the time when Social Security takes a look at your entire earnings record and determines what your retirement benefit will be at your full retirement age. Not at 62, but rather at, for these people, would have been at 66. So the calculation is done then, and that's where the penalty came in. They set their primary insurance amount at that point. After that, any cost of living adjustments that were implemented would boost their benefit above that. But of course, there were 2 years there in a row where there weren't any. So they just were in this weird in-between where they didn't get benefit of the increase for 2009, but they received the penalty of zero for 2 years following immediately thereafter.
Because doesn't age 60 have to play into that somewhere?
It does. So to get even more deeply into this, they do the calculation at age 62, but they don't index your earnings past your age 60. So people are wondering, what does indexing mean? Well, it's the adjustment they make to turn all dollars into current day dollars. So when they look at your earnings from maybe 20 years ago, clearly those are going to naturally be lower on a nominal, what we call a nominal dollar amount, because you were paid less 20 years ago than you are today just simply because of wage inflation. So they adjust for all that so that all the years of earnings are kind of on an even playing field. Well, those adjustments stop at your age 60. they do the calculation at 62, but you're looking back 2 years with no adjustments. So they missed capturing any adjustments there because of that rule. So they're just in this weird in-between.
Did they figure out, or did you figure out on a percentage basis about how much lower is somebody's Social Security if they're born at 47 than everyone else because of this weird thing?
About 5%.
Well, 5% less. Mm-hmm. That's right. Compounded and, over your lifetime.
Right, and they so the calculation for most people, if they for on average, of course, which is if you live to the median age of life expectancy, you're going to lose approximately $12,000.
$12,000
over your lifespan. Now that's spread out over a not very long period of time, right? All the years between 62 and median age, which for a 62-year-old is probably 84, something like that. So the pain is spread out over a while, but it is a noticeable reduction, and there's really no fix in place for this. So it is absolutely true that if you happen to be born in 1947, maybe there's some wonderful things that happened to you in the past because you were born in 1947. This is the offset to that. This is the penalty for being born in 1947. Unintended. Nobody did this on purpose. It's just the way the calculation for Social Security went and this weird blip and then evaporation of inflation. People got an inflation adjustment in 2009 when they probably shouldn't have or should have gotten a very small one, but they got a pretty significant one. 5.8% is a large one-year cost of living adjustment. So people, when they look back and they complain, well, we got zero in 2010 and we got zero in 2011. True, but you got way too much in 2009. So it does kind of all even out, except in individual cases, you see glitches in the system, like we see here for people born in 1947. So, George, I have bad news. If you happen to be asking the question because you were born in 1947, it's absolutely true. You can offset this by delaying your retirement or delay claiming approximately 6 months. That would be a way of overcoming this deficiency on a monthly basis, but you're still giving up essentially 6 months worth of benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bizarre situation, very bizarre, but it is absolutely true. And there were some articles written about this right immediately after it happened in 2009, 2010. There was a little bit of activity, some articles. Haven't heard much about it recently.
Maybe the 1947 lobby should make significant contributions to their political candidates and get this fixed, which is the way it works in America.
True. True.
The best Congress money can buy.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you for that, and hopefully George finds that interesting. When she sent this email, both you and I will confess we had never heard of this. We had to do some research.
Well, I'd heard there was a glitch in the past. The specifics of this one...
Well, we had heard about notch babies before,
yeah,
but we hadn't heard about this issue.
Right.
Okay.
Well, now we know.
We do?
Now we know.
All right, how much time do we have left?
We have about 2 minutes.
2 minutes. Well, probably not long enough to get into one of the other two emails that we have, so we will get to those at the beginning of the next segment.
Maybe give a quick topic as a teaser.
Well, we have a fan from a very far away place. Writing to us.
Probably from this is the longest distance correspondence we've ever
engaged. Oh, I know what we can do.
In.
We can give a hint of where this country is. We will be reading to you an email from a listener in a country that is landlocked and bordered by Russia to the northeast, Ukraine to the south, Poland to the west, and Lithuania and Latvia to the northwest.
See, if we were live, we could have someone entered in the Fat Albert Pie contest if they could answer that.
Exactly. Is this? I don't think this is further away than Australia. I don't think so. Australia's like on the other side of the world.
I'll look it up at the break.
Yeah.
I can tell you.
Put it on MapQuest and see.
I can tell you exactly how far it is here in a moment.
Oh, the map's going to tell you?
Yeah.
I think our Australian listener.
Could be.
Or Japan.
That's a long way.
We had that one person
Japan's
from Japan.
Not as far. If you go to Japan, you're about halfway to where you're headed with this person.
No, Japan's only half the distance to the countries surrounded by
if you go
Russia,
that,
Ukraine,
if
Poland.
If you go that way, yeah. If you go west to get there.
Well, we'll go as the crow flies.
Crows can't fly over the North Pole, so it's not going to work.
Well, we'll go as the penguin flies.
Wow. We have 36 seconds on that note. So how about if I give the hint for the song from 1935 as we're going to come back from this break. So we do have a short break coming up. As we lead up to what's new with helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, we're going to take a look or listen to one of the popular songs of 1935, 80 years ago. This song celebrates the nightlife of Broadway and, quote, Manhattan babies who don't sleep tight until the dawn.
Pete, I'm sure you grew up with that song. You should be guessing these.
Find out what that is when we come back from this short break on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Come on along and listen to the lullaby of Broadway, the hippery and ballyhoo, the lullaby of Broadway. The rumble of a subway train, the rattle of the taxis, the daffodils who entertain.
Well, here we are coming back from 1935. This is the Retirement IRA Show here in 2015. Music's changed a little bit in the last 80 years.
I think it has slightly. Yes.
That is an obvious tune, so we're not going to guess. That would be...
Jim, I think, has got the answer.
Jim, do you know the name of that song?
The Lights on Broadway. I have no idea. It had something to do with Lights on Broadway.
Was playing the lullaby of Broadway.
The lullaby of Broadway.
Milkman's on his way. Sleep tight, babe.
Maybe they're not going to say it again for a little bit.
He's not going to say it again. You just...
It's the lullaby of Broadway.
All right, the lullaby of Broadway. Lullaby. That's what I figured. Conway West.
Who? That was the Dorsey Brothers Orchestra with Dick Powell singing.
And that was in 1935.
It was. This music appeared in not one but two movies in 1935. That was very popular back then. A hit song comes out and they put it in...
A movie.
In the movie. You have to remember in 1935 as well, the same actors would be in like 14 movies every year. Because they were back then, they were under contract with the movie studios, and they just worked them to the bone. They would just crank out movie after movie after movie. So they ran out of people, I guess, to write songs, and they would reuse the same songs multiple times. And that was the case here. It appeared first in the musical film Gold Diggers of 1935. Have you seen that movie, Jim?
No.
Netflix. And later that year was used as background music in the Betty Davis film Special Agent.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Excellent. And why do we do all this?
Because we got sick of listening to music only from 1975.
Can you expand upon that a little?
Well, in 80 years ago, that's when Social Security started. So we thought, hey, let's pay
homage.
Right. I wasn't going to use that word because I wasn't sure what you were going to do with it.
What do you mean? What was I going to do with it?
Well, do we have to review the grammar situation on the show?
Homage, I can pronounce.
Okay.
Some of these cities in the country that we just got an email from. Yeah. No, not so much.
So we're going to kind of celebrate the start of Social Security, which has been a very powerful and popular and effective program over the past 80 years, by looking back at a song, popular songs, during the year where Social Security started in 1935. Coming back from the next break, we'll be taking a look at 40 years ago, so fast-forwarding a lot to 1975, your favorite music, pretty much. I'm not sure how you're going to like this one, but I'll give you the hint when we get close to the break.
You don't think I'm going to like it?
I'm not sure. I don't know if you're going to like this one. It's kind of a different one.
Okay.
Okay. So we've got, you teased us with we have an email from a very long way away. We confirmed that it's not as far as previous emails. We have gotten an email from Australia.
Yes.
Which is 8,900 miles from us here. That's a very long way. Where we received an email. We've also received an email from Japan,
right,
which is 5,800 miles.
58? Mm-hmm. Okay.
This is pretty much tied with Japan, only we go the other direction. 5,400 miles to the listener who sent us this email.
Excellent.
Where is she emailing us from, Jim?
The capital of this country is Minsk.
Oh. Minsk.
Minsk. Mm-hmm. Still want to guess yet?
I don't have to guess because you've told us several times.
Well, I'll give you another hint.
In case we weren't listening.
83.7% of the population is Belarusians.
Oh, that's a big hint.
That is 8% a pretty good hint.
8% is Russian. 3% is Poles. 1.7% is Ukraines.
Ukraines.
That's what it's called, Ukraines.
They ride unicorns.
Oh, Ukrainians?
And they play ukuleles.
And they play ukuleles.
How do you say Ukraines?
Ukraines. It's not Yuka.
U-K-A-I-N-I-A-N-S.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's Ukraine. Maybe it is. Let's pronounce it on... let's go to that.
Oh,
little...
we're going to go to your damn online pronounce. No, because that website just purposefully makes me look like a fool.
Okay.
So it's they've singled you out.
They have. No, go. I want to see how your online dictionary pronounce Ukraine. How would you pronounce Ukraine?
Well, if it's from Ukraine, there's a K-R in there. U-K-R.
Yes, U-K. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
R.
But you're saying it's U-K-A?
Yeah, U-K-A. I-N-I-A-N-S.
I-N?
U-K-A-I-N-I-A-N-S. Make up 1.7%.
You're not seeing your screen very well. That's not U-K-I. It's U-K-R.
Oh, U-K-R. A-I-N.
Okay. Do you want to change your answer?
I-A-N-S.
Yes. It's Ukraine, not Ukraine.
I didn't see the R.
Yes. We're aware of that.
It's Ukrainian.
Ukrainians.
Or Ukraines, not Yuka.
All right, Ukrainians. 1.7% is Ukrainians.
Exactly.
So we give away the name of the country.
Yes, Belarus.
Belarus. We have an email from a listener in Belarus. Her name is Victoria.
Whoa. It's her name's George,
remember? What is she going to do, man? She's from Ukraine.
She doesn't want you just divulging. Well, how would you like someone
from Belarus.
In Belarus divulging your personal information on the radio?
You know how many Victorias there are in Belarus?
I have no idea.
I won't pronounce her last name because it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 letters long, with most of them being vowels. I mean, consonants.
Consonants? So like constellations?
Consonants.
Oh, okay. Sorry. We probably should lay off Jim. I'm starting to feel bad for him.
Yeah, I know. It's just too easy.
Okay. Shall I read?
I'd love to hear it.
It begins. Mm-hmm. Hello.
Are you going to do it in a Belarusian accent?
I will let you read this in Belarusian.
No, thanks. I'm just asking you.
No, because I have no idea what a Belarusian sounds like.
I don't either.
Pete?
Probably very lovely, but I don't
probably.
Either.
Go ahead, Jim.
She writes in broken English, so she and I see eye to eye on a few things.
Perfect.
English is not her native
English
language
is not
either.
Her native. See, I could date this woman, and she wouldn't know I'm muffing up the English language.
I get it.
She would think I'm very bright and intelligent.
Well, she reached out to you
she
from
did.
5,000 miles away.
She did. She wrote, "Hello, my name is Victoria." And she acknowledges she's far away. She writes, "I live far away from you in Belarus. But in spite of that, I know about you and regular listen with you family." I think she meant my family, but she put you family. "Your radio show on internet for several years." She writes in broken English. We've got to cut her some slack.
I'm fine. So I understand what she's saying so far.
Yeah.
"I really love." Now she stops there. I don't know if she really loves the show, really loves you, Pete, me. She didn't really say. She just really loves something. And then she says, "Hopefully and more, you will delight us with their intelligent programs." Mm-hmm. "I've heard a lot, and I would ask you to send some sort of souvenir from your radio show, if possible. My address is..." And she,
yeah, let's not.
She wrote, Victoria, I won't put her last name. And then, I mean, if this is her city, it's Lancha Carrasco or something like that.
Lancha Carrasco?
Mm-hmm. And then
it's lovely in the spring.
But the city is Dobrush.
I thought you said her city was Lobrush Carrasco or
whatever. No, I think that's her. I think that's the street. Hey, you read it.
We're not supposed to be giving their street address out here.
No one's going
to
go look her up.
That's
the street, right?
Yeah, you're giving Victoria on Lancha Carrasco
Street. Well, it doesn't stay
in
street.
The block. Well, don't give her block there because it has like a subdivision name and then the city and then Belarus.
And how would you pronounce
and
the
a postal
city?
Code? The city?
Yeah.
Dobrush.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what is she asking for, people?
Souvenirs.
So we got souvenirs.
And that is just for clarification. to the general public who's listening, that isn't Jim's version way of saying souvenirs. It is written sylvaneers. Just, I'm sure people are wondering that. They're thinking, oh, why isn't Chris saying something? He's clearly saying sylvaneers. What a joke.
Sylvaneer. How do you say sylvaneer?
Wait a minute.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I'm looking at the email. No, it's written souvenir, as it's supposed to be. Jim is... I was trying to defend you, Jim. Oh. Jim, it's souvenir, not sylvaneer. Oh, my gosh. We might have to start recording over. I don't know if I can continue. I thought that was her. Sylvaneer? Is that what you said?
Now you're making me laugh because I don't know what you guys are laughing at.
It's souvenir, not sylvaneer.
Can we move on?
Yeah, go ahead. What are you going to send to this fine woman from Belarus who clearly knows how to spell and probably pronounce souvenir? What do you have for this?
We have her a bumper sticker from KFKA.
Uh-huh, that's a nice souvenir.
I thought so. Mm-hmm. We have a map of Lamoureux County in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Yeah? Did you mark your home on there so she can find you?
No, I did not. But it includes an ad for KFKA in the map.
Oh, very nice.
I thought so. Of course, my 8x10 glossy photo, which I will sign. And what are you guys going to pitch in?
Well, she wrote it to you personally, I'm pretty sure.
Nope, she just began hello.
But who did she address it to?
Nobody.
They didn't go to Jim at jimhelps.com, which is the preferred
method. Well,
every email
comes to me from the website, but she's writing to the show in general.
Oh. Well, maybe I'll come up with something for her.
Well, you all need to come up with something. And let's put it all in an envelope, and we're going to mail it to this address with our return address. And I'm going to say on my letter, I would appreciate something back, and we'll see if we get anything from Belarus.
Yeah.
Does she realize that you are sending her things that you just collected in the lobby of the radio station without actually investing any time or effort?
She didn't say what she wanted.
She wanted souvenir.
She wanted some chachi from the radio show.
Right. Yep.
So.
How about a chip clip? I bet that you
don't
want
a chip clip.
You should send her a chip clip. It won't fit in the envelope.
We have those.
Refrigerator magnets.
No, we have the bags, the recyclable bags. So you don't use a real bag, you carry this bag
that's
around
a
with you.
That's pretty big to send all the way to Belarus.
Light. It's like we can jam that right into an envelope. So we're going to send it.
So
that
you're
going to
fit
too.
One of those
this one,
reusable
Victoria's
grocery bags
get a lot of chachi
into
out of this.
An envelope.
That's how we send them now. We put them in those.
You do?
Yeah, we roll them up into those padded envelopes. So it's not heavy.
Oh, wow.
It's a bag. It's made out of recycled plastic bottles. So, but it has my name on it. So pretty valuable.
You should sign that too.
I'll sign that
So when
that
she
too.
Goes to the market in Belarus, they're like, oh, where did you get that bag? It's from a famous person who wrote it.
Yes.
Wrote their name on there, signed
right.
it.
Exactly. So we will send her that bag, a chip clip,
yep.
a bumper sticker,
yes.
a map, and an 8x10
She's
going to
be overwhelmed
she
by
is.
Your...
Generosity.
And I'm going to ask her to send me a token from Belarus as well and see if she writes back.
This is a wonderful adventure you've got us on here.
I think what it is just probably some young girl who listens and is
to
just,
all radio stations
right,
on the internet.
Just trying to see how much stuff
and
she'll
get. And she's probably written
to
every show.
Exactly.
Which is
this
fine.
This is just a game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're going to play the game right along with her.
We are going to play it. Mm-hmm. But she is not the most... furthest away.
No, the Australian.
The Australian was. And they didn't even ask for any
although they
chachi.
Weren't. I think they were American. They just happened to be in Australia, correct?
Yes. Because you out of the blue mentioned something about Australia, and they listened to us on a regular basis in Australia, and they sent us some information about their retirement program. Remember that?
Yes, I probably did speak of that.
I forgot what you were talking about, but
something
in
about
Australia.
That Australia or New Zealand. There was some, I think the New Zealand system is called superannuation. Is their retirement system? I don't remember what
it was Australia
was.
You were talking about. Yeah. Something with Australia. But anyways.
Well, we talk about practically everything on this show. So.
We do, except retirement planning and IRAs. Okay, so, and then I finally.
How would you, just so I can add it to the list properly, how would you spell phonetically souvenir?
I am not. You know, Pete, You don't get paid for doing this show, do you?
No.
I don't get paid for doing this show. There's only one person in this room who gets paid to actually sit his fat hiney down and do this radio show. That would be Chris. See, I pay him. And I'm starting to realize I am paying you to ridicule me.
For abuse. I know. It's very popular, though, because this show has been on the air for a very long time. So it must work.
So another
maybe people will write to us and if people write to us in overwhelming numbers and tell me to not ridicule or correct Jim in any way, I will stop.
Well,
I feel it's my civic duty though. So if I'm misinterpreting my position here, I'm happy to change that.
Perhaps you should treat me with dignity and respect.
So Selvinaire would be like SEL. Vinaire, maybe Selvinaire.
I don't know, but I'm not playing along anymore.
Okay.
And you're playing along.
I'm going to take my ball and go home.
The next email points out, Pete,
yes.
That I spelled a word wrong on the show.
Well, it's not a word, it's an acronym.
And I spelled an acronym wrong. Mm-hmm. And he points that out.
And actually, I'm not sure that's even, there was this discussion recently by the grammar police that I don't think that is technically an acronym. It has another name when you
Huh?
I'll look it up.
Okay, I thought that was
an acronym.
Yeah, I thought so too. But technically, there's a slight nuanced difference
between an
acronym and this other word I can't recall at this point.
Well, this is an educational program.
It is.
Wow, we're learning a lot.
Yep.
Yeah.
So why don't you proceed with that while I look up what I'm talking about?
That would be helpful.
Yeah. Okay. This gentleman gave his full name, but we shall call him George as well. We're not going to give away his full information. I have no idea where he lives. He listens to us off the internet, so I'm just going to have to assume.
He's anywhere in the world.
He could be anywhere. He could be in Belarus, for all I know.
Sure.
He could be one of the Belarusians. But he began it with HIPAA. HIPAA was the subject, H-I-P-A-A.
Correct.
Why don't you explain what HIPAA is, Pete?
Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. And we had one show, we covered it rather extensively. And we've mentioned it throughout, but basically it's a federal law, came out of the Social Security Act of, I don't know what year, but nonetheless, it kicked in about 5 years ago, and it criminalized the unauthorized disclosure of your medical records without your author, if you didn't give authority for it. And as a result now, the medical facilities and practitioners, rightfully so, are concerned about releasing any medical information, including your whereabouts within a medical facility, because of this law, if there hasn't been a specific authorization. And so the acronym, or whatever the word is.
It is.
Okay.
I've confirmed it is, in fact, an acronym, and I will clarify the distinction after you're finished.
Okay. Of HIPAA is what it's all referred to, and the consequences are basically for an agent under a medical power of attorney or a loved one trying to get information on the condition, whereabouts of their loved one or their principal in a power of attorney can be denied that access, and they won't have the information necessary to make the decisions or to find their loved one.
Okay, so you can get, through an estate planning attorney such as yourself, a certain document that helps, bypass is the correct way of working at it?
Well, it authorizes the release.
It authorizes the release. Okay, and that's what we call a HIPAA document. Is that correct?
Yeah, HIPAA release, HIPAA authorization. It goes by a number of names. There's no real formal form. When you go into the doctor's office every time, you have to sign a HIPAA release when you go in. So it's very common. People know about it. And for estate planning attorneys, what we use it for is we have that with the rest of the documents so that if someone is peeled off the highway or goes in unconscious and they don't have the opportunity to sign a HIPAA release when they go into the emergency room, then their loved ones can call and produce that release, and then they can find out the information they need.
Okay.
Very handy.
Anything you want to say? You had something about acronym.
Yes, so HIPAA is an acronym, and the distinction is if it's the first letters like H-I-P-A-A,
mm-hmm.
and you pronounce it like a word, it's an acronym. But if it's just the first letters like FBI, Federal Bureau of Investigation, that is not an acronym because you don't pronounce it as a word. It's called initialism.
Initialism.
Because it's using
initialism.
The initial letter of each word, but it's not pronounced. We don't pronounce it FUBBY. right? So. It's FBI. So NASA is an acronym, and COBRA is an acronym. So if you pronounce it as a word, once you take these letters and put them together, and then we substitute a word for that, we pronounce it, not just say the letters like FBI or CIA or DVD. Those are not acronyms. Those are initialisms.
So for the subject matter of this show, an IRA is an initial limb, or what is it?
Is an initialism.
Well,
initialism,
some people say IRA.
But IRA would be an
IRA
acronym.
IRA is an acronym. Yep.
Very good.
Yes.
Well, we've learned
there's
something.
There's the distinction.
We learned the five countries that surround Belarus.
Yes, mm-hmm. We have.
Yep.
This show is just chock full of info.
Chock
just
full.
Chock full. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this gentleman writes, and initially I wasn't sure if this was a joke, if he was serious. I do believe he was serious. And I may or may not personally write to him. I haven't quite decided. I've been out of the office yesterday, and this came in over the weekend. But I may try to, because it really wasn't a question he had. It was more of an observation, as he put it.
I think it was teasing.
It might be. Because he began with a compliment, ended with a compliment. It was just the cream filling.
Took
in
a
the
little
center.
Jab in the middle.
Yeah, took a jab in the middle.
Well, you can't. The tone and inflections are not apparent on email.
No. So that's why, yeah. I mean, the guy could be a very nice guy. I do want to address some of the things he points out, because I do feel it's an important opportunity to give a huge disclosure to our listener. So let me read his email.
Okay.
See, I'm torn here, because he gives me a jab for getting the acronym HIPAA wrong. But he spelled the word wrong. So I don't. That's why I thought, is this a joke? You send me an email with misspellings to jab me for misspelling something.
Maybe it's all part of the joke. I don't know.
It could be. I'll read his misspelling as well. Okay. I have been listed to several episodes. I have gotten lots of great information. I super appreciate it. Aside from the banter, e.g., how to pronounce faux, and have we determined right. It's faux?
Aside from the banter, so he's not a fan of the banter.
He probably hates the whole first section of this show. aside from the banter, e.g., how to pronounce faux, remember that's Wade Faux, for those who don't know, very smart gentleman in the financial planning field, professor at the American College, isn't it, for financial planning?
I believe so.
Okay. Which is time-consuming, I have one observation. When you tell listeners how something is spelled, such as HIPAA, and he writes H-I-P-A-A, which you have confirmed, Pete, is the correct spelling, it would be nice if you spelled it correctly the first time. And then here's where he gets a little more personal. H-I-P-P-A, seriously? Now let's explain what that means. When we did that show with Wade's, Wade came out with an observation himself on retirement risks. Mm-hmm. And we were joking with the pronunciation of his last name. So that I do admit. I mentioned at some point HIPAA documentation. And then I did spell it. I said H-I-P-P-A. Mm-hmm. And Pete, you promptly corrected me.
I did.
You did.
We did. As people know on this show, well, we pounce on every opportunity.
Yes. And misspelling and mispronouncing on this show, anybody who listens for a while knows I'm quite notorious for that. So as you so eloquently pointed out.
Of all the things that you have strengths and are masters of certain
pronunciation
elements of
and spelling
financial planning.
Is not one of them.
You know, there's just a few little quirks in the speech pattern.
And the spelling. Okay, so I do freely admit I spelt it wrong. Mm-hmm. I said H-I-P-P-A. Mm-hmm. And then Pete promptly corrected me. Mm-hmm. But he did write, when you tell the listeners how something is spelled, such as HIPAA, H-I-P-A-A, he wrote, it would be nice if you spelled it correctly the first time. H-I-P-P-A, seriously? That's what he wrote. Mm-hmm. You rip on those who call themselves financial advisors, but you give us the wrong acronym or spelling for H-I-P-A-A. And then he ends it with, again, your show is great and I get lots of useful information. So, yeah, I freely admit it. I spelled HIPAA wrong.
And we don't rail on all financial advisors, just those who...
Just those who...
Who hold themselves out as planners when they are definitely not performing the function of a planner.
I would say that's fair. Do you think that's fair? You're the attorney.
No, I agree. I agree.
Okay. So, a few things, and the reason I wanted to read the email, and I may write to this gentleman, we play a disclosure at the beginning of the show and at the end of the show. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into why we do that when we come back and why we always encourage people that, yeah, I may make a mistake. You may make a mistake. Pete may make a mistake. I would hope after 7 years of doing this, if the worst mistake I did was put a P where an A belongs, I would wear that as a badge
of pride.
You
nailed the pronunciation, though.
HIPAA,
it is absolutely HIPAA.
It is pronounced correctly. I just spelt it wrong. We'll get back to this email after this segment.
Well, and then we have some other stuff, too.
We are going to talk about Roth conversions and
Excellent.
Recharacterizations.
So we're having another break here on the Retirement and IRA Show, as you can tell from the background music. When we come back, we will hear the number one song from 1975, this week in 75 specifically. It's a song co-written by an ex-Beatle and an innovative songwriter slash performer known for the far-out personas he developed in his early career.
Elton John.
Negative. You can have another try when we come back. So this is the Retirement and IRA Show. We'll be back with you right after this short break. Welcome back to 1975. This is the Retirement and IRA Show. That is the number one song this week, 40 years ago, in 1975. Jim, what is that song? It seemed to be very popular in your...
Fame.
It is. By?
David Bowie.
David Bowie, with collaboration with John Lennon, actually. And do you know the story behind this song, Jim?
Negative.
It's actually quite fascinating. Let's see. It was Bowie's guitarist, Carlos Alomar, who got Lennon and Bowie thinking about developing a song influenced by the guitar riff used in the 1961 doo-wop song, Foot Stompin'. At first, Bowie was not impressed, but after Lennon started singing the word aim over and over in a long, drawn-out manner in tempo with the riff, Bowie decided to change the word to fame. The rest of the song was developed overnight and added to Bowie's Young American album.
I do like the song Young Americans. We played that, and neither one of you had ever heard that song before.
Young American?
Are You Smarter Than a Young American? Remember that one?
No.
The name of the album is Young American.
When we did our trivia show, mm-hmm. Are You Smarter Than a Young American? Mm-hmm. I had Adrian play...
Oh, play that as the background music.
Yes.
Yes,
Young
I do
American.
Recall that. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I think we'd heard it, just know the name of the song, though. I didn't listen to a lot of Bowie.
Okay.
But, yeah. Did you know that whole story about Carlos Alomar and the...
No. Okay. No.
Another bit of educational benefit from this show. We have geography lessons.
Well, David Bowie also wrote the number one song for Martha Hoople.
Who the what?
Martha Hoople. All the young dudes.
Martha Hoople?
Martha Hoople.
Mark the Hoople.
Mark the what?
Oh, don't look at me like I'm pronouncing that wrong. Mark the Hoople. All right, now I'm Googling
that. I don't know what that
no,
word
no,
is.
No, 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 no,
no.
For those who don't know, during the commercial break that you all were waiting for, they were ripping me a new one just like this other guy did because I mispronounced a few words in the last segment. I didn't see an R in Ukrainian, and I mispronounced souvenir or souvenir. Mm-hmm. Now, Mark the Hoople. I'm looking that up right now.
Who's Martha Hoople?
Not Martha Hoople, Martha Hoople.
That's what I said.
How do you spell Martha Hoople?
MartthaHoople. Martha Hoople.
No, it's MottThehoople.
That's one big word?
Martha Hoople.
Show me that.
The number one song, All the Young Dudes.
It's MottThehoople.
That's what I
That's
said.
Three
Martha
words.
Hoople.
Mott, M-O-T-T.
That's what I said.
The
Hoople.
Hoople. Yeah, Mott the Hoople.
Mott the Hoople.
Okay. I get it now. It sounded like Martha Hoople. like all run
Mott
together.
The Hoople sang All the Young Dudes' number one song in 1972, which was authored by David Bowie.
Okay,
got it.
Now, it's clear, now the dots clear are as mud. Yeah,
clear as mud.
True 70s music fans know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
right there.
Martha Hoople.
All right, so back to this gentleman. Yes. What the reason I wanted to read his email?
We're not going to beat this horse to death, are we?
No, we are not.
Okay.
What I wanted to talk about on this was, Pete, we don't pretend for a minute that we know everything.
That's absolutely correct.
And that's why we play our disclosures at the beginning and the end of the show. And we're going to encourage people. We're going to use this email to, yeah, I made a mistake. I put a P where an A should have been in an acronym.
Well, and the point of that, too, is that yeah, you got the letters mixed up. But the important thing is that you knew what it was and the concept and the law and what it covers and what it doesn't. I mean, that's really the substance of it is more important than the acronym arrangement of the letters.
Correct. But he is right, and he has a right to point out to us when I say something wrong.
Well, we would never do that.
No, as this show shows.
We're very supportive here.
You are very supportive of me.
We just let that slide. Mm-hmm.
But what I wanted to touch upon with his email is we're going to encourage people, when we're on this show, we don't have any type of financial planning relationship, attorney privilege relationship. There is nothing there. We're just giving generalized advice to people we've never met. We believe the advice we give is accurate and it's from sources deemed to be correct at the time. But as our disclosure says, we make no representations as to its accuracy and completeness. So we may say things that are wrong. We try not to. I would hope if after 7 years of doing the show now, Chris, we've been doing it, the worst mistake I made was putting a P where an A should have been in an acronym. I feel good about that. But the gentleman is right. I did make a mistake on the spelling of HIPAA. But what we're trying to get people to understand and why I think the line that stands out the most and the reason I wanted to when he wrote, "You rip those who call themselves financial advisors." Yes, I do that a lot because my industry, unlike your industry, Pete, where in order to hang out a shingle that says Esquire or attorney or whatever it is you guys call yourselves, you have to go through an unbelievable amount of schooling, advanced education, testing, continuing education. The list goes on and on and on.
And some sort of registration or licensing.
Oh,
correct?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's part of it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. If you want to call yourself a financial advisor and not give any specific investment to any one person, any specific investment advice, rather, to any one person, but in other words, write in generalizations or give simple advice, much like the Dave Ramsey's and that woman there, what's her name?
Susie Orman.
Orman and Clark Howard do. And I really like Clark Howard. He gets a few things wrong. I listen to him now on the way home. They don't need any type of registration, education, nothing. They can just get on the radio or get on their high horse and call themselves a financial guru and give financial advice. It's that easy. Now, if you want to give specific investment recommendation, you may have to pass some of these industry exams, which are called a Series 6 or a Series 65 or a Series 63 or a Series 7, depending on what you may want to give advice on. But if you want to be a general financial planner and give general what we call advisory advice, in other words, you want to work for a registered investment advisory firm, you need only pass an industry exam called the Series 65, which you can do after attending about a four-hour course and then take this test. And now all of a sudden, you can call yourself a financial planner and take money from people and give investment advice. So I've said it before, to take $500,000 from somebody and invest it, you got to pass a four-hour exam. To cut someone's hair in the state of Colorado by taking $50 from them, you have to have 1,500 hours of classroom study. Now, what is bigger, 4 or 1,500, Pete?
Oh, let me do the math. 1,500.
Exactly. 1,500 is more hours of study than a four-hour Series 65. You have to pass two practical exams in front of your peers and register and license in a state in which you practice to take $50 from someone to cut their hair, which if you screw up, will grow back. But to take $500,000 from someone, say, and invest it, you either do it in generalized terms, you don't need anything, or pass the Series 65, and you can call yourself a financial planner. So because of that, Chris, yes, we do call out people who call themselves financial planners. Because in this industry, Pete, you are a wee bit older than me.
A bit.
A little bit older. You done playing with coins over there?
Wasn't playing. It was an accident.
Okay. Just in case our listeners heard coins fall.
I was fascinated by the shininess of this quarter.
Instead of listening to me, you're staring at a quarter. Shall we send that to Victoria in Belarus?
No.
Why not?
You can't just ship currency.
You can ship a currency.
I don't think so.
A quarter? Are the FBI going to come after you for mailing a quarter?
They're going to track that back to me, probably. I don't want to be supporting whatever Victoria's activities are in Belarus. I have no idea what she's doing.
Anyways, what I'm trying to explain to this radio show listener who sent us the email, the reason I pick on financial advisors is my industry has yet to become, in my opinion, a profession. It's not yet. It wants to. There are certain self-regulatory organizations, such as the Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, that is trying to take a job and turn it into a profession, a legitimate profession. But it's not. And it's not because it's had its birth, so to speak, in the sales industry. 50 years ago, maybe not even that far back, I've been doing this 16 years. When I first got hired, charging someone a fee to work for you was unheard of. It was all commissions. You got paid to sell a product. I was working for a national firm at the time. I won't mention the name of it. And I was only with them for a year and a half. It was the only firm that would give me a job. And oftentimes, I would meet with someone, and I felt the investments they had were fine. And I would tell them, you're fine. There's nothing needs to be done. For where you are, for what you're trying to do, you're fine. And my manager, my office manager, and I got into many arguments because I didn't convince them to sell what they had and instead buy what I had. And I would tell him what they had was good. Why do I have to sell it and sell him something that I have? So obviously the sales industry was not my strong point, but that never was what I wanted to be. Your biggest asset, Pete, is sitting on your shoulders. My biggest asset, Chris's biggest asset, in our industry, we all have our own practices, our own businesses. I don't have a lot of overhead in the sense I don't have inventory. I don't have any of that stuff. If I want to improve my office, I have to improve my knowledge. My single greatest asset is my ability to understand and give accurate advice. So that's why I am constantly trying to educate myself. I didn't stop learning after I got out of BU in 1998. I have been learning ever since. In a few weeks, I will be in Boston at the Financial Planners, the Financial Planning Association annual meeting for 3 days of classes. Before I leave on this Thursday, I'll be in Denver for one full day of classes. When I come back, I go to a two-day advanced Social Security class. A few weeks after that, 3 days of IRA training under the Ed Slot program. I constantly strive to learn so I can make sure when I am giving investment advice or retirement planning advice, it's accurate. Will I be 100% correct on everything? No. But the vast majority of advisors in my industry, Pete, do not do that. And I know you know that because you teach some of them.
Correct. That's right. A lot of people don't. They get their license and that works for them, and they're salespeople primarily.
Exactly. But in your industry, it's dramatically different, is it not?
Yeah, we have, as Chris had mentioned, and you did too, all the continuing education requirements, competency, all of that plays in to what we do. We're regulated, highly regulated, in terms of not only what we can do, our documentation for When people want to use us, we have to have those in writing, and also we're liable for everything we do. So yes, and we have codes of ethics, and we're held to that standard.
We have talked openly, Chris, that right here in Colorado, right here in Fort Collins, is a gentleman who's been barred for life by the NASD, National Association of Securities Dealers, which would have been not an acronym, but a...
Initialism.
He was barred by the NASD about 15 years ago. The NASD has since become FINRA, which would be an acronym, because we say FINRA.
Correct.
The Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. He was barred for life from stealing money from a person, selling payphone leases that turned out to be fraudulent, ordered to repay hundreds of thousands of dollars. And this gentleman is a licensed insurance agent now in the state of Colorado, calling himself a retirement planner, still meeting with clients, and in my opinion, still giving shoddy, if not bad, advice, because I seem to come across several of his clients all the time coming into my office to fix the mistakes that this idiot has done. So if someone is going to get mad at me when I say you rip those who call themselves financial advisors, yes, I'm going to continue to rip people who call themselves financial advisors, because most people doing this should not be doing it.
There's a lot of good ones out there.
Absolutely.
We're not the only ones.
No,
certainly.
We are not the only ones.
We're certainly not going to stand here and say we're the only ones who know anything. Everyone else is garbage. Clearly, that is not the case. There's lots of very wonderful people in the financial planning profession. Very intelligent, more intelligent than us even, that do a good job for people. But there's an inordinate number, I think, and that it's kind of the attraction of the sales commission side of it. Usually, you get all kinds of people that kind of come out of the woodwork when they think they can sell something and pocket a hefty commission, and they may not have the educational or brain power or ethical background in order to provide proper advice in exchange for compensation. But because of the lax controls in the industry. And this is odd because, you know, the last thing I want to have to do is jump through more hoops or burden myself with more regulatory paperwork and things to do. But I think for the industry, it's better, because right now you're absolutely right. There's a lot of people who don't act on this as a profession and aren't professional in their efforts to give advice.
There is no licensing requirement. Like your industry, Pete, the legal industry. Again, for those who think passing a Series 61 exam, it's a stupid little exam. If it was that easy, why would anybody need a financial planner to begin with? Just take a 4-hour course and you are now brilliant. You know everything. Everything you need to know about financial planning is going to be summarized in a simple 4-hour course you need to take. And even when you pass that, there's no continuing education requirements. Once you pass it, that's it. Now, every few years, I think it's 2 years after you first pass, and then every third year, or it's the other way around, I forget, you have to go take a continuing study part, whereas you sit at a computer and it walks you through these different scenarios. And there's no pass fail. You just click the computer screen. You just kind of watch a series of videos, and that's what they call your
recertification
or whatever.
Like that, yeah.
But you're not studying anything, Pete. You sit at a computer, you read a couple of scenarios, and it walks you through. And if you answer a question incorrectly, it pops up, says you were wrong. This is what you should have said, and it gives you the answer, and you move on to the next one. You do that every 2 or 3 years. I forget how often it is. That is not what I would consider any type of stringent requirements to be in this industry. So the reason I call out people is people need to know not everyone is created equal, just like not all attorneys are, Pete. I think you would agree with that.
But at least they had to pass some threshold.
Right.
Yeah, there is a threshold, but it doesn't mean, for example, if you came to me for a divorce or for a traffic offense or even a criminal offense, I wouldn't have a clue. And I'm certainly not competent to represent anybody in those areas, nor do I really want to. So it's true. If even using highly regulated, licensed professional, we within the legal profession will tend to concentrate in certain areas where we devote our time and our educational efforts and have the experience. So you still have to be cautious even with the licensing, but when it's just a level playing field for anyone who wants to get into the financial planning area, then there's not even that threshold entry-level sort of testing.
There isn't. And oftentimes when I go out in public and I go to a social event, whether it's a fundraiser or a business meeting, and someone asks what you do, I cringe sometimes telling them financial planner because they put this wall up right away. If I go out somewhere and I say I'm a financial planner, instantly they are turned off. I kid you not. And it's because they're so, especially those who attend events on a regular basis like I do, and you do, Pete, they are constantly being peppered to buy things. You go out somewhere and someone's a financial, hey, why don't you tell me about your this? Or, hey, do you want some? And they turn it into something. So I hate it. And it's just the nature of the industry is still sales driven. So we warn our listeners constantly to be careful. Do your due diligence on who you're working with. Yep. Be careful and listen to the advice we give on this show. We think we're doing it right. We think we kind of know what we're talking about. We may pronounce words wrong and joke with each other. Some more than others pronounce the words wrong. But we all respect each other as professionals and the knowledge we all have. Chris is extremely knowledgeable on general financial planning. That's why he's a professor in it, an instructor in it, and extremely knowledgeable, self-taught in Social Security. You are just the go-to person now on Social Security. And Pete, of course, you are extremely knowledgeable in your business law, estate law, and all of those elements. And I am extremely knowledgeable, I'm proud to say, in retirement planning. We all have our areas of expertise and understanding, but I think we would be doing our listeners a disservice, guys, if we didn't warn them about the industry, how it's structured, and how people, in my opinion, who probably have never attended any, because there are no, this is what I'm trying to get people, there are no continuing education requirements for this industry. I have to go through some because I have voluntarily on my own decided to become a certified financial planner. So that self-regulatory organization, the Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, mandates I get some continuing education studies. I'm also an insurance agent in the state of Colorado. They have mandated I get some continuing education studies on my insurance license. But there is no, Pete, requirement by any regulatory agency on financial planning. There's no minimum education requirements. There's no ongoing education requirements. There's nothing. And that's the issue we have. So I hold as a badge on my chest, if in 7 years the worst advice I gave was I put a P where an A should be in an acronym, I'm proud of that mistake. But I do own up that, yes, I did put a P where an A should have been.
Yes, but you nailed the pronunciation.
Nailed it.
HIPAA.
HIPAA. Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody came to you, Pete, and said, I want a HIPAA document, an HIPPA, would you say, what?
I have no idea what you're trying
Yeah, so I don't know what that is.
I think you would kind of know what they were saying.
Well, a lot of times, you know, people come in and ask for things, and a lot of times they're off a little bit just because that's what they heard, and so it doesn't mean... I mean, I know what they want and what they need. So,
would you know if somebody came in and said, I want a HIPPO document?
I've had that happen, yes. people get close. They know what they want. So it's not that critical.
Point is, I'm being a little facetious there. I did pronounce it right. So if somebody went in and said, I want a HIPPO document, I think the attorney would have figured it out. Yeah. But anyways, it was, the email began nice, ended nice. I don't know if he was a financial planner or not and takes offense at how I rip the industry, but we're going to continue to rip the industry. I'm thinking of even starting a segment. We don't know what we're going to name it, but highlighting a lot of the bad apples in the industry, the court cases that come out, the lawsuits that come out, and get people to understand if we can teach them, Chris, of how previous bad apples did things. Maybe we can prevent people from falling victim.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the goals of the show is to educate people enough so that they may not know everything so they can do everything self-sufficiently, but they know enough to know generally the direction they should be going, the types of questions they should be asking their own planners or their own CPAs or their own investment advisors or whoever they're dealing with, and just have a better appreciation for the big picture and how their retirement planning, the components that need to go into that process. Because a lot of people don't even know where to start. And that's, I think, where we began the show is, you know, there's this vacuum out there of education on general retirement planning topics. And I think the more you can assemble your own toolbox of skills and knowledge, you're just in a much better position, even if you don't do your own work. If you don't just do a self-directed retirement plan, some people do that. Other people, though, even if you're getting help, if you know enough, you'll be in a better position to protect yourself from either accidents or, in the worst case, some kind of fraudulent activity that's going to be tried to be, committed upon you.
And that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
Okay. When we come back, we will have the number one song in America 35 years ago. Chris is going to give the hint. Mm-hmm. And we're going to jump into recharacterizations and conversions. Because a recharacterization, if you need to do one, you're running out of time. When we come back, we're going to explain to you what all that means.
So when we come back, we'll hear the number one song from 35 years ago this week. That would be 1980. Next up, the number one song is a song that's been redone by current performers Salt-N-Pepa, Sean Combs, Destiny's Child, and Kid Rock have all redone this song. I wouldn't call those current. Salt-N-Pepa's a little old at this point, but
the only song by them I know is Push It.
Yes, but apparently they've redone this particular song that we're going to hear when we come back for the break.
Okay.
So this is the Retirement and IRA Show. Thanks for joining us. This is a very short break at the bottom of the hour, so we'll be back with you shortly. Thanks for coming back with us on the Retirement and IRA Show. This is the final segment of today's show. They're all looking at me strangely in the studio like this is only the third segment, but we've played three separate songs as we came back from three separate breaks, which makes this the fourth and final segment of the Retirement and IRA Show here on September 19th, 2015. Number one song once again this week. I think this is third week in a row. Diana Ross, which we all know if we've been listening the last couple of weeks.
That was my number
upside down.
Three sign. This is the third week for this song. I didn't know. Jim must have been. Were you referring to the segments?
No, I thought it was the third segment. It's the fourth segment.
Oh, no.
I
don't really, no,
okay. Time flies when you're having fun.
Well, yeah, you dominated the third segment.
All right, then I'll let you dominate the last segment.
That wasn't a criticism. It was just an observation.
What do you know about Roth recharacterizations?
I know that they're there and what they what you do with them and why you probably would want to do them. But beyond that, I'm not in the running.
Well, actually, why don't we get out of the way really quick? Our update on what's new with helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Well, this week on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, our blog that divulges the tips, tricks, and strategies and fun facts about the Social Security system, Jim and I run this blog, have been doing it for, I don't know, what, a year and a half, maybe more. The topic this particular week is very timely in that upcoming here, within the next 60 days or so, we will find out what next year's Medicare premiums are. So you might say, well, Medicare is separate from Social Security. That's absolutely true. But Medicare premiums are related to Social Security in that there are some constraints in what happens with the Medicare premiums because of something that happens with Social Security. And that basic constraint is that if you're collecting Social Security and having your Medicare premiums withheld from your Social Security deposits, I usually say checks, but they don't come out as checks anymore, withheld from your Social Security benefits on a monthly basis, there's a special rule called the Hold Harmless Rule, which states that your Medicare premiums cannot legally go up unless your Social Security benefits go up due to a cost of living adjustment. And if they go up by a certain dollar amount, say your benefits go up by $20 a month due to a COLA adjustment, your Medicare premiums can't go up more than $20 a month. It was a way that Congress put in protection so that people's net proceeds from their Social Security benefits, subtracting the Medicare premiums that are being withheld, that net that gets deposited in your bank won't go down year to year simply because of an increase in Medicare premiums. It was a built-in protection from that. Well, the anticipation, which we've talked about before, is that the 2016 COLA adjustment for Social Security is probably going to come in at a big fat zero, maybe slightly positive, but it's looking more and more like it's going to be zero. But they're talking about Medicare expenses having gone up. So the Medicare premiums are going to go up, but a whole bunch of people are going to be protected from that increase. So the entire increase in Medicare expenses are going to pile up on only 30% of people that are in the Medicare system. So those premiums are, if there's no change to the status quo, unless there's some kind of exception that's made, it's looking more and more like we might anticipate seeing Medicare Part B premiums increase about 52% for that 30% of the population that is signed up for Medicare Part B. We'll have to see over the next 60 days if this actually comes true, but the blog post goes into this in detail. And if you're on Social Security, or if you're on, if you're claiming Medicare, if you're of Medicare age, but you are not receiving Social Security benefits, you are exposed to this potential tremendous increase in Medicare Part B premiums. So you might want to go take a listen, take a read, and take a listen to that blog post over on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. Any questions, Jim?
Nope.
Or Peter?
No, that's very clear.
So very timely article. So if you think that might affect you or anyone you know, please go take a read or take a read. Take a listen.
Take a read.
And or,
you can
and
read.
Or read it.
You can read
take
it.
A read.
What's new, pussycat?
So there's our update. Okay. Now we can get into another timely topic.
Roth recharacterizations.
Yes.
Okay. So why? What is a recharacterization? Well, a recharacterization is the mirror opposite of a conversion. A convert. There are two ways to get money into a Roth IRA. And if everybody listens to the show for a while, you'll know I love Roth IRAs. And Chris, I would say you love them too. Or like
I
them
love
very
them.
Much.
Mm-hmm. Love is, I generally love them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pete, do you love, like, or have no opinion?
I'm enamored with them.
Enamored.
Oh,
yes.
He's falling in love.
Yes. He's getting there.
He's
not
falling
quite
for Roth IRAs.
Yes. Not quite there yet.
He's still in that excitement phase of the relationship.
Yeah, the giddy
kind of
phase.
The falling, yeah.
A Roth IRA is a wonderful, in my opinion, vehicle for saving for retirement and saving for any number of things, because a Roth, if you understand them, can be used for quite a few things. There is two ways to get money in a Roth, though. You can do a contribution and you can do a conversion. Contributions are limited, not based on age. There's actually no age limit on contributing to a Roth IRA, like there would be an age limit on contributing to a traditional IRA, which you cannot contribute to after age 70 and a half. But a Roth IRA has no contribution limit. Instead, it has simple rule. You must have earned income or be married to somebody with earned income, and that income has to be below certain thresholds. They're quite high thresholds, but it has to be below those thresholds in order to contribute money to a Roth. So you could be 85 and put money in a Roth. That's no problem, so long as you have earned income or married to someone with earned income and your income falls below some thresholds. But another way to get money into a Roth IRA is what we call a conversion. I call it a leveraging strategy. So let's just, well, what is a conversion? A conversion is when you take an existing retirement account, perhaps an IRA or a 401k, and you turn it into or convert it, hence the name conversion, into a Roth IRA. And that's when you simply take money from an IRA and move it to a Roth IRA. You can move it one of two ways. You can do it as a direct transfer. You can take money from the IRA, and it is directly transferred. You don't touch it. It goes electronically or sometimes by a check right to the custodian of the Roth IRA. And that's what we call a direct transfer. You never touch it, but you can also convert via what we call a 60-day rollover. That's when you physically take money out of your IRA and you have it. The check, Chris, is written out to?
To you.
To you, exactly. So you go to your IRA, you say, hey, give me a check for $50,000. I'm just making that number up. Give me a check for $50,000. It's written to you. You cash it. You can play with that money as long as, well, not as long as you want, as long as you get it back into your Roth IRA within 60 days. Mm-hmm. But the check is written to you. And within 60 days, if you put it in a Roth IRA, the government will consider that a conversion, and you will have to pay taxes on that $50,000.
But no penalty.
But
if
no
you do
penalty.
It correctly.
If you are under the age of 59 and a half, normally when you physically take money out of an IRA, you would pay a 10% penalty. But if you convert it, there is no 10% penalty. So that's how you can get money into a Roth IRA. You can contribute it or you can convert it. I look at conversions as leveraging. If somebody has $5,000, they could put $5,000 into a Roth IRA. Let's say they are eligible. They could put $5,000, Pete, into a Roth. Or if they have an existing IRA, they may want to consider converting because they can get more money into a Roth. What do I mean by that? Let's say they're in the 15% bracket. We're going to use real simple numbers here. Chris is the math guy, so he's going to do the math. Let's say they're in the 15% bracket, and converting is going to allow them to stay in the 15% bracket, to make this example easy. That means essentially, Chris, they will pay $150 for every $1,000 they convert. They'll have to pay $150 in federal taxes on every $1,000 they convert. I know the numbers in reality don't work out that round, Pete, right? But I'm just trying to give an example. So with $5,000, how much could they convert?
They could convert a little over $33,000.
Okay. So here's what I mean.
And pay the taxes.
And
that's what
we
mean. You could convert that. There, that becomes a taxable event. You owe taxes on that. If you happen to owe taxes at the rate of 15%, the $5,000 you have in your pocket can go to pay those taxes, and now you've got $33,000 plus a little bit in an account that will now hopefully grow, but it will be in there all the way until you take money out, and as long as you only take qualified withdrawals, you will never pay tax on that money again. So it's a way of kind of stopping the tax clock. You pay tax on it at the conversion. No taxes ever again if you handle it correctly.
Exactly. So do you understand, Pete, that leveraging of what I was trying to explain there?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you could put $5,000 in or leverage it into a $33,000 conversion. In either case, the $5,000 was what was used. You either give that $5,000 to the IRS to convert $33,000, or you just put that $5,000 into a Roth. Either way, you either have $5,000 in a Roth or $33,000. We're talking conversions today. We're talking the $33,000. So let's keep running with that scenario. Mm-hmm. So now you have somebody in 2014, say, last year, converted $33,000. Mm-hmm. Now, the government says you have to pay taxes on that, and let's just assume they did. Let's assume they filed their taxes by April 15th and paid taxes on it. Mm-hmm. But now what is approaching is the October 15th deadline. The October 15th deadline is the deadline the government gives you for asking for a mulligan. Isn't that a do-over?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So they're asking for a mulligan. In other words, for one reason or another, you've decided that conversion you did way back in 2014 was not a good idea. Mm-hmm. And you want to undo it. Mm-hmm. There's really two main reasons why you would want to undo it. At least two main reasons in my eyes. That is, the $33,000 is now worth $20,000. In other words, what you bought dropped in value. Or you can no longer afford to have paid the taxes. That $5,000 you gave the government, you could really use right now because something happened.
Right, medical expenses or unforeseen household expenses or something like that.
And you're sitting there saying, God, I wish I didn't convert that money.
Right.
Could you think of any other reasons offhand, Pete, that
Well, I think the one that I've seen most often is after the conversion, the market value of the investments drops. And so they're paying tax on a value that they no longer have.
Right. So let's just use in my example that someone converted $33,000, paid $5,000 in taxes for that conversion, and now the $33,000 is worth $20,000. And they're sitting there steaming. Gosh.
Because now effectively they've paid 25% tax rate instead of 15 because they've paid $5,000
on something worth 20 instead
of $5,000 on something worth 33.
Right. So the government, though, recognizes this and gives you till October 15th of the year following the year you converted to undo it. It's called a recharacterization. Very long word, like 18 letters, I think.
Could have been a word they came up with in Belarus.
Could it be a Belarusian word? So I call it undo. A lot shorter. And when you hear the word undo, you know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
You hear the word recharacterization. Okay. It doesn't impart any immediate understanding of what the word means.
It's not very descriptive.
It isn't. No. Undo is. So I call it undo. It's only four letters. Much easier to pronounce.
And spell.
And spell. U-N-D-O. Mm-hmm. So we call it undo. Government calls it recharacterization. But for instance, in the case where you converted 33,000 and it's now down to 20, you can undo it. And when you undo it, it's simple paperwork. So long as people, you converted into an IRA, or excuse me, a Roth IRA that had no money in it. If you convert into an existing Roth, in order to undo it, it's a lot more confusing. So in my example right now, I'm just going to assume they converted into an empty Roth. So when you undo something, there are two numbers you have to pay attention to. The amount you recharacterize, or the amount you undo, and the amount you actually move. So in our example, to recharacterize $33,000 when the only money in the account is money that was converted that year. You didn't mix it. Remember our jingle?
Mm-hmm. If you mingle, you mangle.
Exactly. That's my jingle. Like that, huh?
Oh, yeah, that's very nice. We need to get a little music with that.
That's what I keep telling Chris.
We've tried, but it's kind of short. It's hard to...
If you mingle, you mangle. And what that means is if you convert into an existing Roth, the math to undo it is rather complex. I can do it for you because I know how to do it, but it's rather complex and I'm not going to explain it over the radio. But in this case, somebody converted 33,000. It's now down to 20. The amount recharacterized on the form is 33,000. That's what you write down. But the amount you move is obviously different. So many people think, I can't recharacterize. There's less in here. The government says you recharacterize the amount you converted minus any losses plus any gains. So in this example, if 33,000 is now worth 20, you must move 20,000. Mm-hmm. The amount you recharacterize is different than the amount you convert. But those are two numbers you need to know. If we flip that upside down, what if you converted 20, it's now worth 33, and you want to undo it? Not because it's gone down in value, but more likely than not, you need the money. You can't afford the taxes you paid. So you want to recharacterize, you would write down 20,000 as the amount recharacterized, but the amount moved 33,000. Because what the government says is they will treat a recharacterization as if the money never left an IRA in the first place.
It's truly like hitting the reset button. If you do it properly, it'll be treated as if you had never done the conversion the year before.
Correct.
It's like it never even happened. It wipes it off, never happened.
It's as if the money never left.
Yep.
So you have to move any associated gains minus any associated losses. That's where it gets difficult if you mix it in with existing accounts, mm-hmm. because that money is moving up and down as well. But as soon as you convert into an existing account, the IRS says all that money just mixes into one, like food coloring. It just mixes right in there and takes it all over. So you have to actually figure out the account as a whole. Did it move up or down? And you have to make that adjustment. And it gets a little bit convoluted in the calculation.
Right.
Okay, a couple of unique things about recharacterizations. Remember, Chris, we said you can convert as a 60-day rollover.
Yes.
You cannot recharacterize as a 60-day rollover. You can only recharacterize as a trustee-to-trustee transfer. The money has to move from custodian to custodian directly. Even though to convert, you could take money out of your IRA, do what you want with it for 59 days, and on day 60, just put that money back into a Roth IRA. That's a legitimate conversion. To undo it, you can never undo it as a 60-day rollover. It has to be done as a trustee-to-trustee transfer. The other thing is conversions and recharacterizations, rather, are not calculated as shares. It's calculated as dollars. You can't say, I converted 100 shares, so I'm going to recharacterize 100 shares. You have to look at the dollar amounts and convert from dollars, not shares. And because it's plus any gain, minus any losses, and if you might not have reinvested dividends in the time that it was in there, you will probably move a different share amount. So it comes off of dollars. That's the key. It does not have to be moved back. This gets a lot of people. It doesn't have to go back to the IRA it came from. And if you convert it from a 401k to a Roth IRA, it does not have to go back to a 401k. It can go back to an IRA. Mm-hmm. So people don't realize that. It doesn't have to go back to the IRA in which it came from. Okay, if the IRA owner is in the middle of taking RMDs, so they're over the age of 70 and a half, and we do this all the time. We convert for a lot of older people, Pete. They can be in their 70s and 80s. They must take their required minimum distribution first before recharacterizing. Little unknown tidbit. Okay, and we already talked about the deadline has to be by October 15th.
Which coincidentally is the extension due date for individual tax returns,
yes.
Which makes
and
some sense.
And that's how they did that.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Partial recharacterizations are allowed. This is another gotcha that people don't understand. Back to our $33,000 example. Mm-hmm. They converted $33,000. Obviously, if it dropped to $20,000, you're going to want to undo it all. Mm-hmm. You're going to want to move it back because why would you want to pay taxes on $33,000 that is now worth $20,000.
Right.
But if you converted $33,000 and it's still worth $33,000, it hasn't moved much. And you don't need all $5,000 back as a tax return. In other words, you'd need maybe $1,000 back. So you just have to move about 20% of the conversion. So you can recharacterize 20% of $33,000 or about $6,600 to generate about $1,000 back on your taxes. You must file an amended return. And I don't do taxes, but Pete, is amended returns hard to do?
No, not at all. It's automatic, actually. Well, not automatic, but I mean, it's they have the form for it. It's pretty easy to do.
One thing I found annoying, I had to do an amended return a couple years ago, and I used electronic filing system to do the original mm-hmm. return. I had to print out and mail the amended return. I couldn't file an amended return electronically. I find that to be annoying.
Hmm. I don't know.
That's government at its best.
The final thing that a lot of people, because I know we're running out of time, get mm-hmm. burned on with recharacterizations is, again, back to somebody over the age of 70 and a half. So somebody is over the age of 70 and a half. They are subject to required minimum distributions. And let's say they converted, in my example, in 2015. Now, let's just say, 2014. Let's say they converted $33,000, okay, on their conversion. Mm-hmm. If they're going to undo it and move it back, the amount recharacterized, the amount moved back, must be factored in to that year's RMD. So remember, RMDs have to be taken first. So they took their RMD for 2014. Then they converted. Mm-hmm. Because people have been hauled into court on this. Mm-hmm. And they convert, and they have a dollar left in their IRA for 2014. Being facetious here. Yeah. And they put $33,000 in a Roth. Now 2015 comes around. What's their RMD for 2015, Chris, going to be based on?
For 2015?
The $1 value.
It should be.
The dollar mm-hmm. value
normally
left,
would be.
Right. Yeah. So a buck is left in their IRA, mm-hmm. Pete, and they think, hey, I skated this. This is great. I moved the money into a Roth. I show a December 31st value of $1 in my IRA. My RMD is going to be based on that dollar. Mm-hmm. So they think that's what their RMD for that year is. And then they say, now I'm going to be wise. I'm going to recharacterize before October 15th, move that money back into my IRA, and skate with my RMD.
Yep.
When you move money back as a conversion and you are subject to required minimum distributions, you must refactor in your RMD for that year and take the recharacterized amount and apply the RMD rules to it.
You have to have that out by December 31 following that October 15th yes. recharacterization.
Yep.
So it's
another deadline.
One of those little gotchas. But so many people try to do that trick. The IRS
they caught on to that.
Nails them all the time on that. Nails them all the time. You can't convert, show a zero balance or a dollar balance, and then recharacterize and think you can avoid RMDs. But I do admire the people who try.
Yep, so this has been the Retirement and IRA Show. If you want some more information on any of these topics, want to contact us, if you go to jimhelps.com, that's jimhelps.com, you can get in contact with Peter there if you have estate planning questions or business planning or other related questions for Pete. We've got a link to get to him there. You can get to Jim if you want to send me a message. I think we're all available at that spot. So jimhelps.com is where to go to connect with us. We'll be back next week with another show here on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Like what you just heard? Missed some of today's show? Listen again on iTunes or the retirementandiraShow.com.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salner & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salner & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.